Good morning, good evening, and good afternoon. My name is Hal Plotkin, and I'm pleased today to be moderating this session, to be serving as interlocutor of the De-Reskill at University project, which is a project that is funded by Erasmus Plus, that includes the Open University of Catalonia, Sorbonne University, University of Milan, and Budapest University of Science and Technology. One of the goals of this project is to develop a blueprint, a wireframe application and design approach for the inclusive reinvention of Europe's higher education system to accommodate lifelong learning and to make it high quality lifelong learning more accessible to members of the European community and to involve Europe's most distinguished higher education institutions more deeply in that process. Today is the third of five panel discussions with top experts around the world as we investigate the various issues that policymakers and higher education governance officials confront as they seek to modernize their institutions to take advantage of this opportunity. We are in incredibly tumultuous times in labor markets. At the precise moment when we have trends in migration and labor market dislocation, we also have massive changes going on in the labor markets themselves, brought on by technology, trends in the renationalization of markets, manufacturing, emerging obstacles that are interfering with the ability of governments around the world to present their citizens with opportunities for upward mobility. One of the goals of the De-Reskill project is to discover how to confront these trends and overcome them in order to provide more opportunities. Most specifically, in the areas of entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship, we are aware that in Europe, as around the world, increasing members of our population are involved in various forms of self-employment, or when time comes for them to reinvent their careers, turn to self-employment or intrapreneurship or within organizations, as organizations themselves must reinvent themselves in order to stay relevant in today's economy. We layer over this the rapid application of digital learning technologies, online learning as well, and it raises the question of how policymakers can respond to the opportunities regarding entrepreneurship and entrepreneurship. That frames today's discussion. Let me move quickly to introduce the two panelists who've joined us today. I see our third panelist has just arrived, Carmen Pages Serra, and thank you very much for joining us as well. We also have, and she is the chief of the Labor Markets Division at the Inter-American Development Bank. And Carmen, we're very grateful to have you here with us this evening as well. Claudia Vuro is an associate professor in the Department of Economics, Management, and Quantitative Methods at the University of Milan. And Philippe LeBaron is the distinguished senior advisor for economic partnerships in the president's office at Sorbonne University. Claudia, let me start with you, given your academic and operational expertise in this area. When you look at this issue of education for lifelong learning in entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship, what strikes you as the single most important challenge or opportunity? And please begin again by giving yourself a perhaps better introduction than I've afforded you today.
Thank you very much. And on my side, I'm in Milano, so good afternoon or maybe evening to everybody. As Hal said, I'm an associate professor of management and sustainability at the University of Milano. So my specialty is in management and business organization mostly. But I'm also a coordinator or a director, if you prefer, of the Master of Science in Management of Innovation and Entrepreneurship, so for graduate students, and responsible for the sustainability education, postgraduate education in our School of Management at the University of Milano. So this is probably the reason why I'm here today. What I'm doing so far is planning together with Philippe, he will talk later, also one of the first experiments or pilot experiments that are involving universities that are currently in the 40 plus alliance in Europe. As I told you, first experimentation of a European entrepreneurial program or program on entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship, but probably we will talk about that later. Going back to your question, I'm dealing with sustainability. That is probably one of the challenges that we are facing. We as citizens, but also in school of management, in business schools, in universities, policymakers. And what is typical of this kind of challenges is that they are very, very, very complex and it needs a lot of multidisciplinarity and innovation as well. So for me, one of the greatest opportunity for education right now is actually to remove the barriers to that kind of separate disciplinary groups and favor or foster cross-sector collaboration. This is probably one of the biggest issues that has to be faced, because mostly the fields don't use to speak to each other. And this is a pity, because we need cross-sectoral disciplines, cross-sectoral participation in order to find innovative solutions to big problems.
Cross-sectoral and multidisciplinary approaches, as entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship cuts across very traditional barriers. Carmen Serra, who is the chief of the labor markets division at the Inter-American Development Bank, I wonder if you could describe from your perspective what the most significant challenges or opportunities you think we face as we look toward trying to prepare more of our citizens to be effective entrepreneurs and intrapreneurs using digital education methods.
Thank you, Hal. Thank you, everyone. Pleasure to be with you today. Can you hear me well?
Yes, thank you.
Fantastic. So just a small correction in terms of my presentation. Who am I? I used to be the chief of the labor markets division at the Inter-American Development Bank. And since the last 2 years, I'm now at Universitat Oberta de Catalunya in Barcelona. And I lead the unit there, prospecting and analysis unit, labor market prospecting and analysis unit of the university. And so in a way, our role is to keep the university relevant. So to keep the whatever we teach relevant to the needs of people and companies. So how does this link with your question, Hal? Well, I see it very relevant because to me, lifelong learning is a matter of agency. It's how we can use skills, knowledges, competences, aptitudes to reinvent ourselves, to reinvent our lives and work, and perhaps our companies as well, through skills. And this is very important. And so we have to provide the avenues for this to happen. And I think one of the challenges that we have is that we don't have enough flexibility, enough avenues for people to really have this possibility. Because right now we're still in lifelong learning. We're still in what the music industry was maybe 10 years ago. We wanted to buy one song and we bought a record, for those of you that are old enough, right? And right now, people are not doing that anymore. They are just building their own playing list. And I think we need to bring that flexibility into our education. So people can maybe, as Claudio was saying, maybe can combine they can combine different disciplines to make their own playing list. But at the same time, we need to have the mechanisms by which one song interacts with another song to make it more powerful. So we don't want a wall in which I just take courses randomly, and then in a way they don't add up to anything that's more than the sum of the parts. So to me, to have a lifelong learning system that works for people to pursue their entrepreneurial or entrepreneurial activities. So no matter what, where they work, to me, you have to have, of course, quality that's always there. I mean, that's for sure, but that's only, of course, a requirement, but it's not sufficient. So we need to make sure that we keep ourselves relevant. We teach, we prepare education that's relevant to people's and companies' needs, and that we can thread these individual units of learning, particularly now that we are talking about shorter units of learning, into pathways that make sense for people, that make sense in the labor market and for entrepreneurship, and that can take people from wherever they are today to wherever they want to be. And this is something we really discuss a lot in this Dear Reskill project. We talked about different methodologies to thread units of learning into something bigger, more powerful in terms of the agency that can give you to pursue your own goals. And we can discuss that later if you want.
Excellent. Carmen Pedrosera is a former chief of the Labor right. Markets Division at the, and I apologize, I'm most familiar, of course, from your work internationally from this position, and also a professor at the University of Catalonia, Barcelona. Philippe LeBaron is the Distinguished Senior Advisor for Economic Partnerships in the President's Office at Sorbonne University. And Philippe, I wonder if we can call upon you. This is an incredibly difficult time to be overseeing university. I have some experience with that here in the United States, of course, in Silicon Valley, where circumstances also change and have been changing very rapidly for quite some time. As you look at this from your perspective, I wonder, I imagine you are trying to both modernize your university and also meet the needs of employers in terms of the skills of graduates or people who carry certificates from Sorbonne. And as you look at this entire issue of lifelong learning for entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship, what do you see as the biggest challenge or opportunity?
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to participate to this panel. It's my pleasure to be here today. Actually, as you mentioned, you know, I am in charge of the relationship between, you know, the university and the socioeconomic world, mostly with companies, but not only companies. And before 2 years ago, I was vice president in charge of entrepreneurship here at Sorbonne University. As I say, you know, I have during all my career, I work with companies, and I have a very good connection with companies, with CEO from companies, and from the discussion with these people during the last years, and it was probably reinforced by the sanitary crisis. All these companies need innovation. They ask, and many of them say, "I don't know. We don't know how to go through innovation. What is the methodology? What should we do?" And this is why, according to what Claudia said before, we 3-4 years ago, it was in 2020 at the, you know, at the middle of the crisis. We decided to implement a new training course in project management on entrepreneurship, intrapreneurship, and it was it started from a discussion with a big company, international company, and the guy that I had on the phone said, you know, can you help to develop some new innovation to catch some new market. And one way to do that was to, as it was mentioned before, and this is probably for me one of the main challenges for the coming years, it was to develop intradisciplinary approaches, you know, pluridisciplinary training courses, because innovation is coming, many innovations actually are coming at the interface between disciplines. And you know, it's like in nature, you know, when you are at the barrier, at the border between two ecosystems, this is the place where we have the greatest activity on the development, and it's innovation is coming at the interface between disciplines. And from this experience, we started in France, in Paris, at Sorbonne University, and now we try to extend, you know, to the European University. This is why we are working with Claudia on this course. And if you listen at the students at the end of the two, three previous, you know, programs, said that it's probably their best experience at the university, just working together with other students coming from different domains. They will never meet, you know, if we don't organize this kind of course. And it's amazing what they can produce, you know, and the solutions that they provide to the companies at the end of the year. And it's really amazing. And it's a case also for the course that we develop at the scale of the European University, because you combine pluridisciplinarity and pluricultural approaches, with students combining students coming from different countries, different language, and for one innovation project, for example, you combine students coming from philosophy, artificial intelligence, ecology, chemistry, marketing. You know, it's amazing the added value of this kind of combination. So that's it for innovation, and I think it's one of the challenges for the coming years to try to push this kind of experiences. It's not easy because this is what we are facing actually with Claudia and our colleagues from other countries. We try to provide this kind of training to PhD students and master degree students. But the problem is that at the European levels, there is no European diploma that we can, you know, provide to the students. So it's we have to, you know, to find some artificial solutions, but it's this is a challenge of building the European University for the coming years. Another point that I wanted to mention, and according to my experience here at Sorbonne University, is that one of our challenge is to provide entrepreneurship skills to all the students, or to the largest part of the students. So we need to provide, you know, this kind of skills to, of course, to PhD students, but not only PhD students, also to students at the different levels at university, to try to introduce what is entrepreneurship, and to be sure that when they enter the university, they can be aware of what can be done. They can share, you know, some experience with some other students who have been entrepreneurs and who are successful for this. And it's very, very important. And this is why the French Ministry of Education decided, I think it's 7 or 8 years ago, to develop a program that we call PEPIT in France. And it's a national program to give the status of entrepreneur student to the students who accept, you know, to receive some training in entrepreneurship. And the goal is to have the maximum, the most important number of students who receive this kind of entrepreneur skills, you know, during their stay at the university. So I stop because I'm too long.
thank you. Philippe Le Baron is the Senior Advisor for Economic Partnerships in the President's Office at Sorbonne University. And Mr. Le Baron has to leave us, our panel, just a little bit early today, so we'll come back to him quickly to include his comments. But Mr. Le Baron, thank you very much for giving us as much time as you have available. The comments that have emerged so far have emphasized the multidisciplinarity of lifelong learning for entrepreneurship and entrepreneurship, also the flexibility of allowing citizens learners, rather, to access just the education that they need for upward economic mobility, and also the ability of combining students from many different backgrounds so that they can learn from each other and foster the kinds of innovations that take place at the edges. My question for all of you, and let me start in the same order, moving as quickly as we can with Claudia, is, do these activities lend themselves to digital approaches, online approaches? Can we envision improvements in online approaches that allow these opportunities to be shared more widely with larger numbers of learners? And before we move to Claudia with this question, I noticed that we have many people in the Zoom room today who are participants in the D-Reskill projects. Scholars from all four participating universities are here, and we encourage you to submit your questions or comments in the chat function. We'd be happy to integrate your comments or questions through the chat function into today's conversation. So Claudia, you know very well the work of this consortium as it develops a design for an online application that could be used broadly. What special challenges are presented by trying to convey this type of education through online modalities?
Yeah, thanks for the question. I think it's really relevant to consider this point. We have experimented all the situations so far because during the COVID pandemic, we were obliged to be online and we were doing it very quickly. So we were basically applying our own methodology. Let me put myself in my own shoes. So as a teacher, as a professor, I was translating my usual way of doing classes in the online mode. Now we have more time to, time to experiment also the hybrid with people in class and after a while meeting online or people in class plus people online. This is the, according to my previous experience, the most complex situation where you have to manage double side, approaches at the same time concurrently. What I found interesting is combining over time, combining these two approaches, the in-presence one that favor social capital creation, let me say, so favor even a friendship or a very live exchange of views and experiences, but also creates very strong bonds among people that they can be used later on. And we know that social capital is very important in entrepreneurship. But at the same time, it takes a lot of time, especially if you put together people coming from different universities or different backgrounds or people that work. So let me consider what happens in lifelong learning. Sometimes people want to reskill themselves while working at the same time. So we also need to find ways of making the program not only flexible in terms of content, but also flexible in terms of, ability to participate and attend the classes. So probably a mix of the two is the best option right now. And the platform should allow a repository of standardized tools and topics people can assess over time, but also a lot of interaction. And on our side, scholars have to adapt themselves to the online mode by making, this is from the experience that I had, making the class much more interactive than even in class. That seemed to be weird, but actually to keep attention live in online classes, we need to stimulate students a lot in participating. And the least effective mode is when you speak and the other just keep their video off. How many times it happens. So you're also inventing and combining different digital tools to involve them in surveys, polls, but also like creating platform to collaborate and make artifacts in an online mode with all the people around the virtual table.
Thank you. Claudia Vero is the associate professor in the Department of Economics at the University of Milan. Carmen, let me move to you quickly and then Philippe, we'll get back to you in just a moment. Carmen, on this question of online modalities, here in the United States, we're seeing a shift in entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship resources as institutions are discovering that, particularly educational institutions, that for the purposes of entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship education, it's often not enough to simply offer a class and then students go through the class, they receive a credential, and the experience ends there. And instead, we're seeing many institutions developing lifelong learning resources that students who go through these programs can access after they complete a course in order to continue to find partners, collaborators, suppliers, markets. They're transforming education systems from one-time experiences into a library that can be constantly, often an open library, that can be accessed 5 or 10 or 15 years after a student has moved through a program. Do you see any merit in these kinds of approaches for entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship education in the European context? Turning to Carmen.
Well, I think, first of all, I think I see merit in this type of approaches, not only in entrepreneurship and in entrepreneurship, but in all kinds of disciplines. I think as we move from education as something that happened at the beginning of your life towards a model in which education is a lifelong endeavor, we have to think of ways of keeping our constituents, students, engaged with institutions throughout their lives. So absolutely, I think this is happening in all the disciplines, not only in the one that we're discussing today. Second, you also ask whether these things can be done online. Yes, I think it requires, of course, changing the tools, changing the processes, changing the way we teach. We at our university, we are a fully online university, a synchronous university. So since day one, since the day we started operating 27 years ago, and we have a very potent, very powerful, probably one of the biggest entrepreneurship programs in Spain in terms of an incubator, an accelerator. So it can be done. It can be done, but it requires shifting the techniques to the online education techniques, which, as Claudia said, I completely agree with you, involves a lot of participation. It involves making sure that people can access resources anytime, any day. Our people connect mostly on weekends and nights because our students are a big proportion of them are already working and doing stuff. And many of them are people that are probably thinking in creating new companies. And they have ideas. They want to develop precisely these parts of their multidisciplinary needs that they don't have. And therefore, they need maybe they have a part of their education, but they need something else. Maybe realize they need to complement their technical skills. Maybe the programming, coding, etc. You name it. So these people access normally they don't have the time to do regular education at the regular times that younger students do. So yeah, the question is, I see it completely. To summarize, I see it as a trend. It's happening in terms of extending. Thinking as students as almost lifelong subscribers, not just initial students. And second, I think more and more we're realizing that also with the emergency of new, all kinds of digital tools, that as long as we develop the right processes and methods, we can teach almost, I would say, anything online.
I appreciate your optimism on these, and we see, you know, a wide spectrum of examples from great successes online that empower millions around the world and other more frustrating attempts. Philippe Le Baron, before we lose you today, I wonder if you have any comments on this question of abandoning or the wisdom, perhaps, of abandoning the more traditional approach of discrete time-limited courses toward the use of those courses, perhaps in particular with entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship, so that the people who are included in lifelong learning for these purposes gain some measure of permanent access to resources, particularly open resources, that they can rely on as they try to develop their career. Do you see much interest in that kind of work at Sorbonne University or with the strategic partners with whom you work?
Yes, I completely agree with what Claudia, you know, and what was said before. You know, it's it depends what we are discussing. You know, if it's, for example, if it's for training in training a student in entrepreneurship, for example, it's more easier because it's easier because we can provide some online training, you know, and it works well. We have some entrepreneurship diploma, for example, at Sorbonne University. It's a very it's a unique and large program to train people in entrepreneurship, and it's easy to be done. It's not a problem to organize this, you know, online. And as it was mentioned before, many students have a job on the side, so it can be also entrepreneurship. And people have a job, but they can follow, you know, the different courses or classes, you know, online at the time they want, you know, when they have some free time. So it works pretty well. And but if we consider another part of the entrepreneurship training, if you combine, as we said with Claudia before, with something like a project management, from the experience that we have, and also from the first year of experience for the this diploma at the scale of the European University, we have students. You know, you have some students who are in Germany, some students who are in Italy, some students who are in France, and so on. And of course, it works online. And for the experience that we had this year, you know, the students met 1 week at the beginning. It was in November. And next, everything was done online. And it was amazing to see how it works so well, you know. And they meet, you know, every week, working on a project all together, and it works. And it's amazing because it's not easy to work on a project, you know, on the development of a project when you have to be innovative, you know, to think, to discuss with the others, and it works very well. But as Claudia said, you know, I'm convinced that it's very important to probably what we do, you know, just 1 week in presence, you know, at the beginning and 1 week at the end, mostly for the committee on the final step, is probably not enough. But it's also a question of budget, of course. But yes, this kind of combination between, you know, online and presence is important. And it's probably the best solution. But we learn from the COVID crisis, you know, from the sanitary crisis. We learn all these methods and approaches, you know, online, and it works. It works very well. And we are changing, you know, the way we provide, you know, teaching at university. But again, for entrepreneurship by itself, many things can be done online. No problem.
Very good. Well, thank you for this broad overview of this topic, our three panelists. Now I want to, I think, increase the difficulty of the conversation just a little bit, keeping in mind that we want to keep our responses short, particularly to enable Mr. LeBaron to participate at least one more round before we have to lose him today. And that is, as we look at all of the factors that you've identified this morning, flexibility, multidisciplinarity, need to include access to permanent high quality resources. The biggest issue that we're seeing here in the United States, and I think around the world, is how we do this in a season where we see technology, in particular artificial intelligence, changing the nature of many jobs and occupations and markets. So the jobs that we're trying to prepare students for are themselves changing very, very rapidly because of artificial intelligence. And also artificial intelligence is changing the way education itself is done and how student performance is measured and assessed and conveyed. This is all greatly complicates the opportunities to move forward here. We see many educational institutions paralyzed because they don't quite know what to do at this particular difficult time. And going back to Claudia, I wonder what advice, realizing there's no perfect answer, but what advice would you give to policymakers about this time of very rapid technological change in both education and in labor markets related to the rapid development of technologies and particular artificial intelligence. How should we confront those issues?
It's a very complicated question. Just let me answer with the first thing that comes to my mind and relates to entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship is creativity, and creativity is something that as human being made. So one of the tools or the classes that are that we taught at the beginning of an entrepreneurship course is about how to educate creativity, to be able also to use technology that can kind of paralyze us, as you were saying, in our favor. So actually, training creativity is one part of the story, according to me. And then a lot of knowledge and experiments, because we're not, I mean, I don't really have an answer. But for example, we have a course in data science and economics, and students wonder what should they do. So since sooner or later, there will be kind of a machine substituting their ability to measure data or outcomes and so forth. So the answer is someone has to be behind that. And so this someone, entrepreneurship can really help in looking at this problem as an opportunity for a new for another innovation. So this is my very quick, I don't know, probably incomplete answer.
I appreciate that. Let me ask an even deeper question on the same trend, though, to Carmen. As you know, the DeReskill project is also trying to take advantage of the ESCO classification system that identifies skills and competencies so that students can measure their abilities and the specific skills and competencies that would enable them to move forward in their career. When you look at the relationship between advanced technologies, including the new application that the DeReskill project is designing, and the rapid growth of these artificial intelligence approaches, how do you see these trends intersecting, and where are the opportunities, particularly what would you suggest to funders about the kind of work that they could support that would allow the most progress with the greatest impact, a beneficial impact to society? Carmen, I wonder if you would share your thoughts with us.
Yes, I think, so you mentioned three trends, changing skills, changing methodologies of teaching, changing even the way we assess that teaching. I think First of all, I would say technologies are replacing us in many of the things that are more, in a way, replicable by technologies. And this up to now has been things that are automatic, that can be, that are repetitive and routine-based. The new technologies are replacing or have the potential of replacing us in particularly language, natural language, processes, which means how we use language. So I think so this is the first reflection. I think the way we need to keep ourselves relevant as humans means that our education has to be, surprisingly, probably more humanistic. It's making sure that we have strong skills in those things that make us human and different from the machines. So creativity, Claudia said, but there are others like our capacity to empathize with others, socialize with others, communicate with others, build with others, and so on, right? So everything that makes us human. So this, I would say, it's something that we need to build from the beginning, from the early years onward, and make sure that this is very strong. But then, as we have these foundations and as we are strong humans, the environment is changing very quickly. So I think we also need to equip universities and learning institutions with the tools to track the labor market, to understand what's going on out there, because I think the worst thing that happens in universities is that we get close in our ivory towers and we don't understand what's going on out there. And we fear it. I don't think we should fear it. In the unit that I represent now in the university, it's a very new creation unit, and it's called Prospecting and Labor Market Unit, because precisely it has the role of understanding what's going on out there in terms of how the skills are changing, what knowledge requirements are new, and bring that knowledge to the audiences, which are our program directors, our professors, basically, that prepare subjects, and to our students, right? So understand the labor market they're going to be facing outside of the university. So devising these tools, and oftentimes, as you know, in the project that we've been working, these tools involve technology, right? So it's making the best use of digital technologies to understand what's going on and bring this information in. And so to be able then to be adjusting, probably at the margin. Let me rephrase that. As I said, what's very important is the foundations of a good education, which means having a lot of these socio-emotional skills, creativity, cognitive skills very well developed. And then be able to, in the course of our lives, acquire the right skills that combine these strong foundations to make us, to help us evolve as professionals, as people, as the world moves along very quickly.
Thank you very much. Carmen Serra is a professor at the University of Catalonia in Barcelona. Philippe LeBaron, are you still with us?
Yes, but I need to leave in 2 minutes here.
Okay. So let me give you a chance for a closing comment here. The communication, how learners and professors, trainers communicate with students and how the students communicate with each other is very important. As you know, the DeReSkill project is developing a new application, the design for a new application, which is essentially about communications by helping students understand their skill set and matching them with the training opportunities through the ESCO database that would allow them to move forward. Do you see opportunities to use new types of computer-mediated communications technologies to improve education outcomes in this area? We already have Zoom, we have so many other technologies. Do you think this is an area where Sorbonne University can continue to support innovation?
Yes, of course. Sorbonne University should, you know, contribute to this kind of innovation, but to be honest, this is a key, your question is important because this is a key element, you know. It's very, the communication with companies, with, you know, socioeconomic partners, but the communication with the students also is something that we need to improve on. To be honest, at Sorbonne University, we are not the best in this area, and we need to, you know, to spend a lot of energy on this because this is a key issue. You know, for the development of entrepreneurship, the development of the connection between universities and the socioeconomic world. You know, it's we are working actually on some what's the name in English of that? It's a sort of I forgot the name. It's a sort of data of a dynamic database, you know, for that universe that the socioeconomic partners can use just to have some contact with the expertise of the students, of PhD students, of students in at university. But we need to improve this kind of tools, of course. Yeah. But we are not the best on this point, I think.
Excellent. Well, that's exactly the work of the DeReSkill project. Mr. LeBaron, I know you have to leave. I want to thank you very, very much for spending time with us today. We will continue the conversation without you. And of course, we'll keep you advised of our work and our conclusions and recommendations.
Thank you again for joining us. Thank you for inviting me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let me move back to Claudia, for we just have a few moments remaining. Claudia, we were talking about, and Mr. LeBaron was also emphasizing the importance of developing new tools, and that's the work of the DeReSkill at University project, is thinking through the requirements of new tools that students and learners and teachers can use. What concerns do you have about fears that you might have about things that should be avoided in developing new tools that may not reach the kinds of audiences that you are most concerned about giving this kind of assistance? when you make a new tool for labor market analysis and educational discovery for individuals, what are the design considerations that you think are most important to keep in mind?
I'm not an expert in platform development, but what I can say, probably data so far that are the source of the elaboration, let me say, are very fragmented. So, and it is very common that they don't communicate to each other. So it is not easy on a very macro point of view to have the full picture available. And sometimes it's difficult also to use data in support of real-time decision-making. I saw one of the questions or comment in the chat that was pointing out to the fact that we are not enough trained in use these tools. For example, at our University of Milano, we have projects also to advance the competences of professors in the use of technology. It's not easy. But one thing is, of course, usability, probably. So how easy they are, because sometimes you spend a lot of time in learning how to use, and then it changes very quickly. And so, I mean, it's also a matter of time and the quality of data that enter into the system also. So this is another key concern that I have. Sometimes also, I often check data on employability of our students in order to make decision on how to get in contact with the labor market to improve their occupation or their contact with the students. And it's not easy also to collect this data because sometimes students don't return questionnaires, or so connecting with the relevant users is a very key issue there. So make them very easy to be used, not so complicated to be trained at, and also try to reach the data where they are needed, let me say in this way.
Claudia Voro is the associate professor at the University of Milan. Let me turn to Carmen Serra at the University, Open University of Catalonia, with a similar question. Carmen, when I served at the federal level here in the United States, working in the Department of Education and working in the Department of Labor, we had enormous difficulties with our tools for labor market analysis and labor market discovery. One of the key factors I'll summarize, and I think it's relevant to the de-reskill project as it thinks about the application it's designing, is in some cases, we were very good at looking at the data of what happened yesterday in the labor markets, but we had no clear methodology to understand what was going to happen tomorrow. And for our students across the country, they were less interested in what happened yesterday than what happens tomorrow. Do you have any thoughts as you work designing your approaches to this about how tools can be more sensitive toward the kind of discovery of data that's more relevant to the students who are preparing for the labor markets of the future?
Well, I think it's very difficult to predict the future. That's kind of what's going on here. That's why the data is limited. I mean, and particularly when the future is changing in such structural ways, I think it's almost like impossible. The approach that we're taking is a little different, because I think in principle, first of all, I think the labor market is very fluid, and the professional lives of people are going to be very fluid. So you can start today as one occupation, but your professional career is going to change many times, probably going to be very different things in your career, and you're going to work for many different people. That's going to require many different skills. So I would say, I think what we need to be focused on is how we can provide education that's very foundational, that can help us do, you know, be many things in our life, all these things that we're going to do, and also help us to learn fast and in efficient ways, because also we compete against artificial intelligence that learns very quickly. And then guide us, have tools that guide us and what is needed today because maybe that's what today you need to do, right? And tomorrow, who knows? Tomorrow you may want to do something different. And also helps you to know how, if you want to be going from here to there, how you would be getting there. But I mean, first, because I know very much the limitations of what we are able to predict, how we are able to predict the future, which I think is very, very little. And second, because I think we have to focus a lot on this sort of two-step, right? Foundations plus add-ons that are going to be changing over time. And we're going to have a lot of specific skills that maybe to yesterday were not needed, but today, for what I wanted today, are needed. Case in case, I mean, I'm working in the university, we're getting this tool. I had to learn a lot about user experience, for example, right? What makes a tool approachable and interesting for the user? Well, there's this whole thing about user experience and making sure you do the right research about the user, what the user needs and what the user wants. And you create these personas, which are the different potential users. And then you make sure that you test the, you know, all these. I didn't know. I'm an economist. I was trained as an economist. So I had to learn, and that was good. I learned and I really enjoyed doing it. So I think and this is part of our entrepreneurship within the university, we decided to take this tool and to move it forward and we are creating something new and innovate, and hopefully an innovation can be useful for other people. And we are learning. So I think our aim is not so much to predict the future, because I understand that when you, in the old world, when you wanted to do a career, it was like, oh boy, I need to make sure I predict my future well, because it's going to be going with me the rest of my life. I think we have to understand that maybe you start like A and you're going to turn into B and you're going to turn into C as you move along. And so make sure that people can do those transitions fast and well, and they're well equipped to do them. And then we help them to do them.
Thank you, Carmen. Carmen is the former chief of the labor markets division at the Inter-American Development Bank and currently a professor at the University of Catalonia. Claudia, you began this conversation by emphasizing multidisciplinarity and a variety of different approaches. We have a provocative comment from our colleague Bernie at Hasselhoff at Sorbonne about, instead of attempting to predict the future, which no one can do, he says, why not we try and get ready and prepared for whatever the future may bring us? In that context, thinking about entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship, there are skill sets that are identifiable, raising capital, dealing with public capital markets, investor relations, markets, market surveying. You can think about all of the typically business approaches, but there's also a harder to define quality of a successful entrepreneur or intrapreneur, which often has to do with personal psychology other factors that maybe are not so technical in nature, but more humanistic. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your observations about how you can begin to identify, through a multidisciplinary approach, the various ingredients, the various factors that could be considered to achieve what Bernie is suggesting, preparing students for whatever the future may bring.
Yeah, it's a very nice question, thank you. I would add to the comment that I really appreciate that one of the things that entrepreneurs tend to say that they define the future. So future is not something that is outside, and they just are subject to that, but they can also shape the future trajectories. And this is the core issue of being an entrepreneur. But yet, going back also to your comment that I think is very relevant, let me mention a research that we had with employers of our students in the Master of Science of Management of Innovation and Entrepreneurship. We were asking what kind of transversal skills or competences they are looking for in the students and what kind of competences they found in our students. And what impressed me was actually that the social, you were referring, the humanistic ones, were most important than the technical ones. So it was a little bit depressing as a management teaching, a management scholar teaching like tools and budgeting. But I mean, they tend to give for granted that, but they look for special competences that are in the realm of the social interaction. Like, for example, let me mention international attitude that they appreciate a lot. So being able to work with people from different cultural backgrounds, or the relational skills. So take coffee together and be able to keep the conversation. Flexibility, so adapting to the unknown, what can happen in the future. Don't be scared about your inability to control the event. I mean, be ready to also challenge yourself without knowing the answer and admit that you don't know the answer to something. These were mentioned as very, very important skills. And in terms of the hard skills, they have to be paired with data analysis. This is something we already mentioned, or the ability to use digital technologies. So key things that we don't usually mention in entrepreneurship, but plus a lot of social skills that are related to how people actually behave in a team or behave in a workplace. And one very last comment on that, Philippe said that we had this nice experience with students coming from many disciplines, especially STEM discipline fields. And they mentioned that one of the things that they appreciated the most from our multi-university project on entrepreneurship and entrepreneurship was the ability, the possibility, the opportunity to work in groups. And for most of them, that was the first time they were working in teams. And it was impressive, but sometimes happen, especially in scientific fields, that you are used to work in labs, but the entrepreneurship is mostly collaborative. And this is something that you have to be trained at.
Thank you. Well, we have time just for a few closing thoughts. And just at that moment, our colleague, our treasured colleague, Mitchell Peters, introduced a wonderful phrase in the chat. He talks about organizing matrices based on axes of critical uncertainties. What a wonderful phrase that Mitchell Peters has introduced into the conversation here, because I think that's really the environment in which we're dealing with is identifying the uncertainties as a foundational step in then trying to address those. I wonder, as we just wrap up, we just have maybe perhaps a 1 minute each, but let me go back to Carmen. As you collaborate with your colleagues in these projects, and you consider what Mitchell has suggested about the need to address critical uncertainties, how do you move forward? And how would you suggest funders, in particular, at the national and institutional level, move forward in making wise investments in sustaining projects like the DRESkill project, despite the fact that we have so many critical uncertainties? How can funders move forward with confidence in the area in which you specialize?
It's a very good question, Hal. I think first of all, I think I think we have uncertainties in some areas. We have certainties in others, I think. So in a way, trying to combine, I think if you only do things that are totally certain, you will probably get to where you were. So you need to fund a certain degree of, you have to plan for a certain need of uncertainty and be willing to fail at quotations in some of the projects you fund. I think that's the first thing. So as a funder, you have to take risk. Otherwise, you don't get innovation and as a funder. And in projects like us, that means, I think, the fact that we've done a stage, that we have a prototype, that we move forward. I think the project had a lot of that because we had the opportunity to work chemists, data scientists, educators, economists. I think was one of the most marvelous things that we had in the project, putting all those talents together that think very differently, I mean, process information very differently. That was fascinating to see. But at the same time, I think we came up with something which I think is very, very interesting as a prototype of what these tools can be, you know? Tools to create recommendations for students, tools to provide ways to guide and create pathways, personalized pathways that can serve students to go from where they are today to the where they want to be in the future. So I think that's having a prototype and so in a way it's saying giving grants in stages, making sure that you limit the risk. If nothing happens as a prototype, maybe you shouldn't continue with that line of funding. But for projects such like ours that have already a working prototype, I think then funding the next stage, which is the implementation part, would be something that to me would have high return because you already invested in something that has a pilot and it can seemingly, I think that all the data suggests that it can work. So
thank you very much, funding the implementation. Professor Sarah is the distinguished former chief of the labor markets division at the Inter-American Development Bank and a leading academic authority at the University of Catalonia in Barcelona. Professor Sarah, we're so grateful for your comments and thought leadership today. Claudia, let me give you the last word before we wrap up on this question of, in view of all of the critical uncertainties, as Mitchell Peters put it, that we're dealing with and the need and the desire of the DeReskill at University project to see its prototype further developed and sustained. How can funders move forward? Same question as previously addressed. How can funders move forward with confidence in such an area with so many critical uncertainties?
I don't know, maybe promoting experimentation, so real case implementation. So getting contact with the final users and refine what you have already done by involving the relevant stakeholders in a way that they can give feedback and actually support you in refining the technology. Even though we are living in a world of a world with a lot of uncertainty, still we need to be trained at learning, and this is the reason why learning will never stop, and so we need to continue fund this kind of projects.
Experimentation. Very good. Well, that's a bit of what this entire project is and this conversation as well. Claudia Voro is, again, the distinguished associate professor at the University of Milan, and along with Professor Carmen Serra and Philippe LeBaron from Sorbonne University, we would like to extend our thanks for their participation in this provocative dialogue today. Before we conclude, let me also thank organizers of the DeReskill at University project at Sorbonne University, Professor Corinne Aubert and Professor Francois Rocher, both of whose leadership were essential to my involvement in this project. And I'm so grateful for the enormously capable and able team of scholars they've brought together to address this critical need. I'm Hal Plotkin, and this project is the DeReskill at Universities project. And please stay in touch with us so that we can present you with information about future dialogues as well as archives where similar conversations can be reviewed. Thank you again very much, all of you, for your participation today. I wish you a good day, good evening, good morning, wherever you are, and look forward to seeing you at our next dialogue. Thank you so much, all of you.